Eddie, the Collegiate Freshman. Chapter 5. Spring Semester, Part 2. The end of the month brings good news for Eddie and Kathy. They head to the office of Davies and Rice, LLP, where they will be signing the papers for the three abandoned houses on 2nd Street. When they arrive, Eddie and Kathy wait a few minutes while the paperwork is prepared. While they are waiting, Kathy tells Eddie, "Paula is really happy about this. Can you believe that?" Eddie reminds Kathy, "And I thought Paula once said that 2nd Street is haunted, and it's spooky. I thought I'd never see her anywhere near that street again." Kathy replies, "Something changed her mind." Eddie suggests, "Maybe it was the bulldozer." When they are called in by the attorney, Kathy tells Mr. Davies, "I'm so glad to meet you. I've heard a lot about you over the years." Mr. Davies replies, "It's nice to meet you too. And that story about my football scholarship has made me famous around this town." As they walk down the hall toward the conference room, Mr. Davies asks Eddie, "Are you ready for next Tuesday?" Eddie replies, "I am." Mr. Davies tells Eddie, "Usually when a house is foreclosed, I get a lot of people calling, wanting information on the property. For Crumb's property, I got nothing, nada, nil, zilch." Eddie replies, "That sounds like good news." They then enter the conference room, keeping quiet any further conversation regarding the foreclosure. Kathy and Eddie take a seat at the conference table, across from the representative from Carmen and Lang, LLP, who is Mr. Lang himself. Mr. Davies goes over the paperwork, which is minimal since Eddie and Kathy are paying cash for the three properties. Eddie and Kathy sign the required documents. Mr. Lang signs the three deeds, conveying the properties to Kathy and Eddie. Kathy hands Mr. Davies the certified funds, and the quick closing is over inside of 15 minutes. Mr. Davies tells Eddie, Kathy, and Mr. Lang, "Congratulations. It sounds like everyone got exactly what they wanted out of this transaction." Mr. Lang assures Mr. Davies, "You can be sure we did." Eddie replies, "Good. I'm glad we could help you out." Curious why Eddie wanted the property, Mr. Lang asks, "So, what are your plans for the properties?" Eddie replies, "We needed a place to park some construction equipment." Mr. Lang tells Eddie, "Good luck. There's a crazy guy who lives on that street. He's as stubborn as a brick wall." "Not anymore, for Mr. Crumb is in jail." But Mr. Lang does not know that. Everyone heads home, and everyone is happy. Over the weekend at the university, Braden is assigned the night shift along with Officer Jeff Levi. With fraternity and sorority parties going on all weekend, two officers are always on duty. The other officer, Officer Kevin Morrison, has the night off. Chief Anthony Toledo also patrols the campus, primarily during the week, but occasionally on the weekends. And a few retired police officers routinely walk the campus, looking for and ticketing illegally parked cars. Braden is glad to take the weekend shifts, since he now has to pay for insurance and gas for his June buggy, not to mention dates with Wendy. Fortunately though, the spring semester is a bit quieter than the autumn semester during rush week. While on patrol, at around 3 a.m. early Saturday morning, Officer Braden radios to Officer Levi, 365 to 412, "Meet me on TAC 1. Officer Levi replies, "412. 10-4. TAC 1. On Tactical Channel 1, Braden tells Officer Levi, "We might have something going down at the arena." Officer Levi replies, "What do you have?" Braden explains, "I have three guys hanging out around the service door to the arena. One of them keeps looking around the corner." Officer Levi replies, "I'm on my way." Officer Braden tells Officer Levi, "Meet me behind the student center." Lights off. Officer Levi informs Braden, "I'm on frat row. ETA 2 minutes. Braden then radios the dispatcher, telling her that he and Officer Levi are out of service until further notice. Behind the student center, Officer Braden has a great view of the service door to the arena, which is approximately 200 feet away. In addition, behind the student center is dark, so Officer Braden cannot easily be seen. Officer Levi arrives, clearly seeing Officer Braden's concern. As Officers Braden and Levi are watching, they see one of the perpetrators trying to pick the lock. Officer Braden whispers to Officer Levi, "Okay, now we got trouble. Something's going down." Officer Levi tells Officer Braden, "We'll let them enter, then move in and see what they are up to." Officer Braden replies, "Well, I can tell you they are not here to take a few laps around the track." Since Officer Braden is more familiar with the inside of the arena, Officer Levi asks Officer Braden, "Is there really anything in there of value?" Officer Braden replies, "In one storage room, there is a lot of track equipment, like starting blocks, the shot put, and field equipment. In one of the offices, there are a lot of start watches and a bunch of files and clipboards. I don't know what's in the other two offices. And there's the men's and women's locker rooms." Officer Levi, who is very familiar with the entrances and emergency exits to the arena, asks Officer Braden, "How many entrances are there to the locker rooms?" Officer Braden replies, "In the men's locker room there are three. One in the hallway, another leading to the arena, and an emergency exit to the outside. I'm guessing the women's locker room is probably the same. Three doors, three perpetrators, and two officers is not exactly the best scenario. Making matters worse is that there is no backup officer available. But, worst case, Officer Braden and Officer Levi will catch two of the three perpetrators. One of the perpetrators, obviously skilled in lock picking, picks the lock and opens the door. All three trespassers walk in, closing the door behind them. Officer Levi whispers to Officer Braden, "They are in." Officer Braden and Officer Levi move in slowly. As Officers Braden and Levi hide around the corner from the service door, Officer Braden jumps up and grabs onto a brick ledge. Pulling himself up, he takes a look through the window. Officer Braden sees the three perpetrators heading in the direction of the men's locker room. Seeing the perpetrators open the locker room door, Officer Braden jumps down, telling Officer Levi, "They went into the men's locker room." Officer Levi tells Officer Braden, "Okay, we move in together." Officer Braden suggests, "We probably should enter by the door in the hall. If they leave through the door to the arena, we'll have plenty of time to catch them. If we enter from the arena side, they'll have two exits. We definitely don't want them to get to the emergency exit. If either officer covers the arena entrance to the locker room, all three perpetrators could potentially escape through the emergency exit." Officer Levi agrees with Officer Braden's strategy, and they move in to make the bust. Officer Levi opens the service door, but, unlike the perpetrators, he uses a key, making entry go a lot faster. Quietly closing the door, the officers peek around the corner. They can clearly see the light is on in the men's locker room through the air vent on the lower half of the door. As they approach the locker room, they hear people whispering inside. Holding off for a minute or so to see whether they can discover anything, they hear one of the perpetrators whisper, "I got it." They then hear a locker door open. Officer Levi motions to Officer Braden that it's time to move in. Gently opening the locker room door, yet ready to act quickly, the officers immediately do not see the perpetrators. Officer Braden ascertains that they are on the other side of the central group of lockers. In the worst case, one perpetrator could potentially escape, either through scrambling or a quick exit into the arena and out another door. Carefully thinking this out, Officer Levi signals that he will move in from the left and that Officer Braden will move in from the right. Officers Levi and Braden move in. Making the ambush, Officer Levi exclaims, "Freeze!" The three perpetrators, seeing the officers, attempt to rush out of the locker room and into the arena. Two make it out, but Officer Levi quickly tackles and subdues one of the perpetrators. Officer Levi cuffs him as Officer Braden hurdles over the traffic jam through the door to the arena. Officer Braden chases down the other two perpetrators, who are quickly running toward the exit door to the arena. With 40 yards on Officer Braden, the perpetrators exit the arena and make a run for it. Officer Braden slams through the door and is quick to see the perpetrators have split and gone in opposite directions. Officer Braden picks one of the culprits and chases down the one who broke to the left. Braden's 45-second quarter mile is put to good use as he quickly gains on the perpetrator. Sensing that the officer is closing in rapidly, the perpetrator sharply breaks to the right. Officer Braden reacts quickly and goes in for the takedown. Officer Braden chop blocks his opponent, making the tackle, and takes him down hard. The perpetrator cushions Braden from the impact into the concrete. Sliding across the concrete for a few feet, the perpetrator takes the full brunt of the takedown. Officer Braden cuffs the perpetrator, who is none other than Todd McCutcheon. Seeing who it is that he was pursuing, Officer Braden exclaims, "I wasn't expecting to see your flimsy ass until Monday." Officer Braden reads him his rights. Braden declares, "Your fat ass has the right to remain silent. Let me start this again. You have the right to remain silent. If you give up your right to remain silent, anything you say may be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to speak with an attorney and have him or her present during questioning. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be provided for you by the court. Do you understand these rights as I explained them to you?" With blood flowing down his face from having it sandblasted during the takedown, McCutcheon exclaims, "Yeah, yeah. Whatever." McCutcheon then exclaims, "I'm bleeding. Get me some help." Braden tells McCutcheon, "I told you. You have the right to shut your fat ass. And I suggest you exercise that right, or I'm gonna shut it up for you." Officer Braden radios Officer Levi, telling him, "I got one of them. They split and the other one got away. This one's pretty bad. I'm dragging his ass to the infirmary." Officer Braden drags McCutcheon to the university's infirmary, which is a shorter walk than back to the patrol car. McCutcheon limps along the way, exclaiming, "My leg. My leg. It hurts. It might be broken." Officer Braden responds, "I told you. I suggest you exercise your right to remain silent. So, shut your fat ass up." Over the radio, Officer Levi informs Officer Braden, "We have a crime scene here. I'm taping off the locker room." Officer Braden replies, "As soon as I dump this one off, I'll be headed that way." Officer Levi relates to Officer Braden, "It looks like it's going to be a long night. Apparently, what was going down in the locker room is a little more serious than a skirmish between fraternities." On the way to the infirmary, Officer Braden asks McCutcheon, "What kind of shit were you pulling in there?" Hoping that one of his cohorts is able to cover their tracks, McCutcheon replies, "Nothing." Officer Braden responds, "Yeah. We have a crime scene, and you were doing nothing. Ain't no one gonna believe that." McCutcheon insists, "I needed something from my locker." Not believing that for a moment, Officer Braden replies, "Yeah, right. Ain't no one gonna believe that shit either." Arriving at the infirmary, Officer Braden transfers McCutcheon to the medical staff. Officer Braden explains that McCutcheon is under arrest and to not allow him to leave the building. It's not likely McCutcheon is going anywhere anyway, for he can barely walk. McCutcheon is warned by Officer Braden that, if he does leave, he will be in deeper trouble than he already is. Officer Braden tells the medical staff, "His right leg is in pretty bad shape. I had to help him get here. And his face had an argument with the concrete when I took him down. The concrete won." Officer Braden then tells the medical staff, "Call us when you're ready to release him. We'll put him in the campus jail." The campus jail, as Braden puts it, is four holding cells in the campus police station, which are usually reserved for unruly frat boys who get into an altercation while under the influence of alcohol. After dropping off McCutcheon, Officer Braden makes his way back to the arena. On his way, Officer Braden wonders what McCutcheon could have been possibly doing in the track team's locker room at 3 a.m. in the middle of the night. Officer Braden is also wondering who the other two perpetrators are. He is about to find out from Officer Levi who one of them is. Returning to the locker room, Officer Braden announces his entrance by saying, "Okay, what do we got going on here?" Officer Braden sees the other perpetrator sitting on the floor in the corner in handcuffs, with his head hanging down. Wondering who it is, Officer Braden tells him, "You, sitting on the ground. Look at me." The perpetrator looks up at Officer Braden. Officer Braden laughs and exclaims, "I can see this is gonna be a really fun night." The other perpetrator is Steve Leggett, which comes as no surprise to Officer Braden. Officer Levi explains to Officer Braden, "Let me show you what we got so far. First off, there's a tension bar and rake on the bench. We got three boxes of methadone in the locker, and two on the floor. I radioed the dispatcher. They called the infirmary. It turns out that they are steroids. And we have some pot too. I found a dime bag in the locker, and two on the bench." Braden looks around, amazed that this is the same locker room that he was in yesterday morning. Officer Braden asks Officer Levi, "Did you get anything out of him?" Officer Levi whispers, "He coughed up a little bit. Step over here." The officers momentarily step away from Leggett. Officer Levi whispers to Officer Braden, "Before I could arrest him and read him his rights, he was screaming some obscenities about some guy named Mark. He's been drinking, but he can walk the line. I arrested him. Then he got real quiet." Officer Braden finds his own locker and, knowing that Mark's locker is three down from his, exclaims, "That's Mark's locker." Officer Braden asks Leggett, "What were you doing in Mark's locker?" Leggett replies, "I don't remember." Officer Braden tells Leggett, "That's okay. You just keep believing that. I'm sure Mark is gonna jog your memory someday. I want to be there when all that goes down. And don't look to me for help when he does." After photographing the crime scene earlier, Officer Levi now bags and marks the evidence, emptying Mark's entire locker. Officer Braden tells Officer Levi, "I'm going back to get my car. We'll take this one to the tank when I get back." Officer Braden heads out on foot to retrieve his vehicle as Officer Levi finishes collecting and marking the evidence. Leggett, meanwhile, sits on the floor, handcuffed. When Officer Braden returns, they load the evidence into the trunk of Braden's patrol car. Leggett is placed into the back seat, and they all take a ride to the campus police station. On the way, Officer Braden asks Leggett, "So, are you gonna tell us what you were doing in the locker room?" Leggett replies, "I told you. I don't remember." Officer Braden suggests, "Maybe your memory ain't so good because you've been taking drugs." Leggett answers, "I haven't been taking drugs." Braden asks, "How would you know? If I remember correctly, you just said you can't remember shit." They arrive at the station, where the evidence is checked in and filed. Leggett is placed in the holding cell until it is decided what to do with him. Once they are done at the station, Officer Braden gives Officer Levi a ride back to his car. As a precaution, Officer Levi returns to the men's locker room, placing crime scene tape across the doors. Braden goes back on patrol, wondering what will happen Monday morning when Leggett and McCutcheon fail to show up to track practice. Monday morning arrives, and Braden, Leggett, and McCutcheon are nowhere to be found. The men's locker room is still closed off, with no explanation. With massive amounts of tape that reads, "Police line, do not cross," across each entrance, no one dares to enter the locker room. Dr. Braun calls the campus police department and is instructed to find another locker room or cancel practice for today. The police department declines to give Dr. Braun any details regarding the situation. Hearing the news, Dr. Braun instructs the team to have a seat in the arena. Dr. Braun announces, "I spoke with the campus police just a moment ago. I am informed that the men's locker room will be unavailable today. I was told to either find another locker room or cancel practice for today." Bobby B. remarks, "A lot of our stuff is in there." Dr. Braun continues, "That's why I'm canceling practice today. But before everybody leaves, do any of you know what this is about?" A few of the tribe members know, but Braden strictly told them to not say anything. No one offers up any information, so Dr. Braun apologizes to the team about the canceled practice session and sends everyone home for the day. The next day, on the first Tuesday of the month, Eddie heads out to the courthouse steps, ready to bid on Mr. Crumb's house. Kathy heads to track practice, wondering if the news that she is already aware of will be made public. Kathy got the rundown from Braden that McCutcheon, Leggett, and a third person broke into Mark's locker. No one, however, is more interested to find out the details than Mark. Eddie arrives at the courthouse steps and finds Mr. Davies, who will auction off Mr. Crumb's property himself. Eddie and Mr. Davies talk for a while, as Mr. Davies is waiting to see if anyone else shows up. At the requisite time, 9 a.m. sharp, two other attorneys begin auctioning properties. One particular piece of property has seemed to attract a lot of interest, with about two dozen investors bidding on the parcel. Mr. Davies tells Eddie, "Okay, I need to get started." Mr. Davies announces the description of the property being sold, the name of the bank that is foreclosing on the property, the name of the person whose house is being foreclosed, and a few other details of the property, such as the full legal description. Mr. Davies whispers to Eddie, "He has a $5,000 balance on his mortgage. Start bidding at $6,000, because the mortgage will have to be paid off, and there are other fees." Mr. Davies then asks for an opening bid. Eddie offers $6,000. Mr. Davies then asks, "Do I hear another bid?" No one answers, primarily because Eddie is the only one to show up. Waiting a minute, Mr. Davies proclaims, "We have a bid of $6,000. Do I hear another bid?" With no answer, Mr. Davies announces that the house is sold to Eddie. Mr. Davies and Eddie talk business for a few minutes, then Eddie heads to the bank to get the certified funds. Mr. Davies heads back to his office to prepare the foreclosure deed. When Kathy gets home from classes later in the afternoon, she runs through the door and exclaims, asking, "Did we get it?" Eddie replies, "We did." Kathy yells out, "Woohoo! We got it. Time to get a bulldozer." Kathy asks, "So, how much did we pay for that old Crumb's piece of shit house?" Eddie replies, $6,000. Kathy replies, "Wow. Are you serious? That's nothing." Eddie tells Kathy, "I was the only one who bid on it. I guess no one else wanted it." Kathy replies, "I can see that." Now owning all four properties on 2nd Street, Kathy tells Eddie, "I'm calling Paula." Eddie informs Kathy, "I need to talk to Mark sometime too. We need to bulldoze all that shit down. Oh, and after the auction, I got Mr. Davies to apply for the rezoning and a demolition permit. He said that shouldn't be hard to do." All excited, Kathy calls Paula with the good news. While Kathy is talking with Paula, Eddie goes downstairs to work out in their home gym, where he thinks about what to do with the land. After Kathy is finished talking with Paula, she comes downstairs to work out with Eddie. Eddie asks, "So, is there any more news on why the locker room was closed down?" Kathy replies, "No one is saying anything. The coaches know that Braden knows, but they are not pumping him for any information. And Dr. Braun is really ticked off that Leggett and McCutcheon weren't at practice today." Eddie laughs and comments, "And they won't be there tomorrow either. I wish I could be there to see that." Kathy and Eddie work out, speculating on why Mark's locker was targeted by McCutcheon and Leggett. A week later, the news finally breaks surrounding the incident that occurred at the men's locker room in the arena. Due to the seriousness of the situation, Police Chief Anthony Toledo and the Dean of Students, Dean Addison Grimsby, arranged a meeting with the track team and the coaches. To avoid stirring up the rumor mill, Dr. Braun wanted everyone, not only half the team, to be present. Dr. Braun also wanted everyone to hear the news directly from those who have accurate information. The meeting is held in the arena at a time familiar to all, 7 a.m. Once the team is dressed and ready to practice, they all hang out in the arena, as usual, waiting for the coaches to walk in. Dr. Braun walks in and blows his whistle, prompting everyone to take a seat on the bleachers. Today, Braden is sitting along with the tribe on the bleachers. Dr. Braun announces, "Okay, everyone listen up. Today, we have Police Chief Toledo with us, who is going to advise us on certain recent discoveries that have been made surrounding an incident that recently occurred in our locker room." Once Chief Toledo is finished, Dean Grimsby will address the team. Then, we will move on to today's training session. Dr. Braun introduces Chief Toledo, giving him the floor. Chief Toledo begins, telling the athletes, "First of all, I apologize for the training session you missed the other day. But, maybe some of you enjoyed your day off. Now, on to business. A certain two members of the track team have been detained and are currently under investigation. I'm sure you can figure out who they are by their absence. These two students have been arrested for possession of a banned substance and attempting to plant that banned substance in Mark Svoboda's locker. This banned substance is an anabolic steroid called metandienone. In addition, we have evidence that marijuana also was attempted to be planted in the same locker. Many of the team members are surprised at hearing the announcement, but they now know why Leggett and McCutcheon have not been at practice. The tribe, thus far, has not heard anything Braden hasn't told them." Needing help with his investigation, Chief Toledo announces, "Now, I need help from some of you." Officer Braden and Officer Levi distinctly saw three perpetrators enter the arena that night. The two track team members who were taken into custody insist that it was only the two of them and maintain that they know nothing about a third person. "If any of you hear anything regarding this third person, please let one of the officers or myself know. Please be assured that anything you tell us will be held in strict confidence." Braden whispers to Mark, "Whoever the third guy was, he was definitely faster than McCutcheon. I picked the slower one to chase down." Mark whispers back, "Anyone is faster than McCutcheon." Moving on to more interesting news, Chief Toledo continues, "There has been some concern about another member of this team, Edward Boganskaya, that many of you know. We have concluded our investigation into Edward, which is now closed. Dean Grimsby and myself feel it necessary to reveal the results of that investigation to the team and the coaches. Neither Braden nor the tribe has heard what Chief Toledo is about to announce. Since Chief Toledo's announcement involves Eddie, Kathy is sitting on the edge of her seat." Out comes the announcement from Chief Toledo: Edward Boganskaya was accused of taking and distributing anabolic steroids. Our investigation reveals that the steroids attempted to be planted in Mark's locker bear the same lot number, the same production date, and chemically match those found in Edward's locker. Based upon these findings, the department has closed the investigation into Edward Boganskaya, finding nothing by which to incriminate him. Kathy is immediately happy to hear the news, but maintains her composure until Chief Toledo is finished speaking. Chief Toledo concludes by telling everyone, "Thank you for your time, and I will now turn the floor over to Dean Grimsby." Hearing the news, Kathy is as happy and bubbly as she can be. Cheers come from the bleachers, primarily from where the tribe is seated. Everyone in the tribe exchanges high fives, exuberant that Eddie has been vindicated. Kathy receives more high fives in a 15-second time span than she can ever remember. Everyone on the team hears the news, except for Eddie, who is home, getting ready to go to work. Chief Toledo exits the arena, going back to his duties, as Dean Grimsby walks up and stands in front of the group. Kathy has heard about the earlier meeting between Eddie and Dean Grimsby, which did not go too well. Eddie's impression of Dean Grimsby is that he's pretty much an asshole, an opinion the tribe now shares. But now everyone will find out what the Dean has to say. The tribe will now decide for themselves whether Dean Grimsby really is an asshole or not. Dean Grimsby begins, addressing the team, "It is my understanding that some of you are taking steroids, selling them for profit, or perhaps both. The use of performance-enhancing drugs in this university is highly frowned upon and has the potential to severely tarnish the university's reputation. I am now conducting an investigation into the use of performance-enhancing drugs by the entire track team. For right now, two specific team members are being investigated." Several of the team members yell out the names, McCutcheon and Leggett, in response to the dean's statement. The team has figured out what happened and who has been absent from practice. The dean sternly warns the team, "Excuse me, but I was not finished. I expect complete silence and your full attention when I am speaking." Kathy whispers to Paula, "Just like Eddie said, he's an asshole." The dean continues, "Now, as I was saying, two of the team members are under investigation. They will continue to be with you in the classroom and will still be allowed to participate with the team. No specific action will be taken until my investigation is complete. Dean Grimsby has screwed up once already, clearly demonstrated by the way he handled Eddie's case. This time, the dean will wait for the final results of the investigation before taking any action." The dean, finishing up his not-so-popular presentation, states, "I will conclude by saying that what has happened here has been a great embarrassment to this university. I can firmly say that I am not very happy that I have to deal with a situation such as this. Be assured that all of you are being closely watched." Dean Grimsby's address is met by boos and jeers, which the athletes figure they can get away with since they are in a large group. Kathy has now seen firsthand Eddie's beef with Dean Grimsby. The dean leaves the arena, which could not have come soon enough. Once Dean Grimsby is out the door, Kathy tells Paula, "Wow. Eddie can be back on the team if he wanted to." Paula asks, "What do you mean, can be back on the team if he wanted to?" Kathy informs Paula, "Don't tell the coaches, but Eddie's pretty much had it with this university. He may not come back." Paula replies, "That would really suck. But I can't say that I blame him. Oh, and can you believe it? Dean Grimsby is a bigger asshole than Mr. Crumb." Kathy agrees, telling Paula, "Yeah. Eddie was right about that guy. Dean Grimsby really is an asshole." Dr. Braun blows his whistle and announces, "On that note, it's time to get some training in and burn off some of that adrenaline the dean was kind enough to cause you to release." The team heads out to the track, with everyone, including the coaches, now knowing exactly what is going on. During the walk out to the track, Dr. Braun informs Kathy, "Today's news probably means that Eddie's hearing is on the horizon. It should be any day now." Kathy asks, "Why can't Eddie come back right now?" Dr. Braun explains, "Well, the dean started an investigation. The hearing is how they officially close it out. It sounds like the hearing will be just a matter of formality." Not sounding too excited, Kathy replies, "I can't wait." A few days later, McCutcheon and Leggett return to the team practice sessions. As the dean mentioned, McCutcheon and Leggett will be attending their classes and still practice with the team while they are under investigation. While they are getting dressed in the locker room, they are keeping a watchful eye out for Eddie, planning their exit strategy should Eddie appear and approach them. McCutcheon and Leggett are also carefully watching the tribe, especially Mark and Braden, as the tribe members occasionally glance over at the two outcasts. Seeing that McCutcheon has returned, Mark is contemplating preparing another special bottle of shampoo for McCutcheon and is planning to mix one up for Leggett as well. Mark has made a mental note of Leggett's brand of shampoo, planning to buy one during his next trip to the store. But for now, since McCutcheon and Leggett are keeping a watchful eye, it might be difficult to move in and make the swap. Mark is studying the situation and will make his move when he finds an opening, just like Mitchell when he runs the mile, but in a different sense. Out on the track, it's a day on the training sled and running interval training drills. The sprinters gather around the sand track, taking their turn on the sled. After taking two runs down the track and back, Mark notices that McCutcheon has not taken a turn. Right before Johnson is about to take a turn, Mark interrupts the sequence, announcing, "It's McCutcheon's turn." Reluctantly putting on the harness, McCutcheon cannot dispute Mark. With a less than notable effort, McCutcheon makes his way down the track. As McCutcheon struggles to return the sled to the starting point, Braden exclaims, "Look at his sorry ass. No wonder he ain't worth shit to this team." When McCutcheon finally makes it back, Mark comments to Braden, "He's weak. He definitely needs to be taking steroids." Braden tells Mark, "I'll get his ass moving. Just wait until relay drills. I'll shove that baton up his lazy fat ass. Then, we'll see how fast he can run." Mark's and Braden's comments are fully intended to be heard by McCutcheon. Their comments are also heard by Coach Herndon, who always laughs under her breath at Braden's remarks. With two sleds returning to the starting point, Mark and Braden both take a turn, showing McCutcheon how it's done. After Braden returns from taking his turn, he yells at McCutcheon, telling him, "Get your lazy ass back on that sled. I don't like losing, and I'm not about to start now." McCutcheon replies, "But I just took a turn." Hoffer announces, "I'll go." Stepping up, Hoffer puts on the harness and heads down the track. Braden points at McCutcheon and rants, "I wish they'd put your ass back on the bench and give us Hoffer. Look at him. He works. You don't do shit." McCutcheon reminds Braden, "You sprained my knee when you took me down." Braden counters, "So what? When I hand off to you, if you don't grab that baton, I'm gonna shove it up your fat ass and sprain your ass too." Listening to the exchange, Coach Herndon asks McCutcheon, "So, your knee is sprained?" Wanting some sympathy, McCutcheon explains, "Yeah. It's sprained really bad. Braden sprained it when he took me down. He did it on purpose." Coach Herndon tells McCutcheon, "That's too bad. I don't want you running if you're injured. You're back to being an alternate." Focusing her attention on Braden, Coach Herndon tells him, "Hoffer will replace McCutcheon in the 4x440 and the mile medley relay." Braden replies, "Thank you. Thank you. Now, we're gonna win something." Coach Herndon's decision to replace McCutcheon with Hoffer is the best news Braden has heard all day. When Hoffer returns, he receives the good news from Coach Herndon. Braden has his own way of delivering the news, telling Hoffer, "Coach Herndon took out the trash. The good news is now we're gonna win. The bad news is I'm not gonna get to shove the baton up McCutcheon's fat ass anymore." Happy with the coach's decision, Hoffer tells Braden, "I'm definitely looking forward to this." Knowing that the relay teams might now win something, Braden and Mark exchange high fives with Hoffer. Johnson will receive the good news later. McCutcheon, not happy with Coach Herndon's decision, discusses the coach's decision with Leggett. In a depressed mood, McCutcheon laments, "They did it again. I can't believe this. What is it with these guys?" Giving McCutcheon some encouragement, Leggett replies, "My days at this university are over. I'll be graduating soon, but you have 2 more years here. Good luck with those guys." McCutcheon comments, "At least Eddie is gone." Leggett informs McCutcheon, "I wouldn't count on it. I don't think he's going to give up that easily." McCutcheon breaks into a temper tantrum, kicking the gravel with his right foot, Grabbing his sprained right knee, he quickly realizes that he shouldn't have kicked the gravel, escalating his temper tantrum. Word that Hoffa has been substituted for McCutcheon has quickly made its way around the team. Hearing the news from Mark, Kathy comments, "I'm glad Coach Herndon made that change. But I really wish Eddie was back on the team." Mark replies, "I think we all do. McCutcheon's got to go. I'm getting rid of him." Kathy asks, "How are you going to do that?" Mark replies, "Little by little. When I get done with him, he'll be a basket case." Kathy replies, "After that shit he pulled with Eddie's locker, and now yours, all I can say is good." Mark adds, "And my wedding." Paula is really ticked off at McCutcheon and Lug Nut for pulling that shit. Since he has not been attending track practice, Eddie has been busy working on Johnson's and Bobby B's June buggies. After building a few, Eddie can now crank them out very quickly. Getting the June buggies done before the summer, they are now ready for delivery. And, just as ordered, Johnson's June buggy is silver and Bobby B's is red. Matching everyone else's June buggies, Johnson's reads, "Johnson's June buggy," and Bobby B's reads, "Bobby B's June buggy" on the back. With five matching high-performance June buggies soon to be on campus, they are certainly going to be attracting a lot of attention. Figuring out how to deliver the June buggies to their new owners, what better way is there to do it than to arrange a pool party? Eddie and Kathy plan the party, inviting the tribe and one or two others from the track team. McCutcheon and Leggett are intentionally left off the guest list, and Mark made sure they knew it. Mark, letting McCutcheon know that he is not invited, is eroding away McCutcheon's fragile ego. Mark is simply working toward his goal of getting the loser off the track team. The day of the party arrives, and the guests arrive one by one or, in some cases, two at a time. Eddie's brother, John, is among the guests today, wanting to take a look at his June buggy in its partially assembled state. Mitchell arrives early, driving his Opel, with Bobby B, Erica, and Akinmola. Erica would ride her motorcycle, but she wants a ride home in Bobby B's brand new June buggy. Driving up, Bobby B sees his metallic red June buggy parked in front of Eddie's workshop. Getting out of the car, Bobby B rushes toward his new June buggy. No one has ever seen the shot doc run so fast before. While Bobby B is looking it over, Erica sits in the driver's seat, quickly understanding what the big June buggy craze is. Eddie walks out of the house and asks Bobby B, "So, what do you think, bro?" Bobby B exclaims, "It looks great." Eddie tosses Bobby B the keys, telling him, "Go ahead and take it for a spin. I haven't driven it yet. Let's see if it makes it back." Bobby B asks, "You haven't driven it? Really?" Eddie replies, "No. I'm pulling your leg. I drove it to the service station and did the wheel alignment. It runs like a charm." Now feeling a bit more confident, Bobby B gets behind the wheel and heads out for a short ride with Erica. Eddie, Mitchell, and Akinmola are checking out Johnson's June buggy while Bobby B and Erica are away on a test drive. Johnson arrives with Barbara, seeing the guys checking out his new toy. Johnson walks over, joining the group, immediately exclaiming, "Nice." Eddie throws Johnson the keys, telling him, "Take it for a ride, but watch out." Bobby B is out on the roads test driving his. Mitchell comments, "He's been gone for a while." Eddie replies, "That's because Erica is driving it now. She's going to want one when she gets back." While Bobby B and Johnson are away, much of the rest of the tribe arrives. With the workshop garage door now open, John, along with a few others, is checking out his June buggy, which is only partially assembled. Looking over his brother's work, John is quite amazed at the intricacies under the body. The wiring is all laid out neatly, as are the brake lines and fuel line. Eddie used all stainless steel bolts, washers, nuts, and screws. The engine and front suspension all look brand new. Seeing the partially finished product, John can't wait for his dune buggy to be finished. Bobby B. returns with Erica driving, and Johnson is right behind them. Apparently, they met on the road somewhere and drove around for a while. As they pull up, Erica yells out, "I want one." Eddie asks, "What color?" Erica yells out, "Light blue." "Like, really light blue. Not like Braden's blue one." Eddie replies, "I'm sorry. I'm all out of light blue dune buggies. I'll have to build one." It's hard to tell whether Erica is serious or not. But Erica and Bobby B. have both found out that a motorcycle may not be the best mode of transportation in the rain and snow. While some in the group were checking out the dune buggies, others were relaxing in the pool or at the poolside. Braden is relaxing in the pool with Mark, giving him all the details on what is going on behind the scenes regarding the tampering of his locker. Braden tells Mark that he has been investigating McCutcheon and Leggett, finding out a few details that will be very incriminating when the time comes. Hearing the news, Mark is more convinced than ever that he needs to get rid of McCutcheon. Braden and Mark are working on a few ways to get rid of McCutcheon and Leggett. Braden proposes to Mark that, in order to get McCutcheon and Leggett off the team, one thing that would help will be writing some running cadences. Braden suggests, "I could write some running cadences, and we can all chant them when we run at practice." Mark asks, "What's a running cadence?" Braden explains, "It's that chanting that the military does when they run." Mark replies, "Oh yeah. I've heard them." Braden adds, "They are also called jodies or military cadences. But I call them running cadences because I run." Braden then tells Mark, "Some good stuff has run through my head when I take the recovery lap during our drills. I could lead the running cadence, and you guys just repeat what I say." Mark asks, "I got to hear this. Tell me some of them." Braden tells Mark, "Check this out." Braden chants, "McCrutchen is a great big pain, watch his times go down the drain. When he runs we lose the race, he can't run a decent pace. Get McCrutchen off the team, that is our biggest dream. Leggett's ass is fat as shit, that is why he likes to quit. Leggett's slow just like his friend, they will both come to an end. Leggett's on his way to jail, all his classes he will fail." Braden then tells Mark, "That's what I'm talking about." Mark laughs, telling Braden, "We seriously need to do this, bro. How about Monday at practice?" Braden tells Mark, "We'll have to make it later in the week. Eddie's hearing is Monday morning, and they told me that I got to be there. And they are making McCrutchen and Leggett show up too." Mark suggests, "We'll do it the first chance we get." Hearing the military marching cadence, Paula exclaims, "That's great. Let me know when you're going to do this. I want to be part of it." Wendy, who is laying on a float, tells Braden and Mark, "You guys are so funny." Paula remarks, "Mark is right. McCrutchen has got to go. First he was after Eddie, then Mark. Who knows who's next?" Braden tells Paula, "It's probably gonna be me, because I put his ass in jail twice. Once this year, and once during your wedding." Hearing everyone laughing, Eddie and Kathy walk over to the pool area to see what's going on. Kathy asks, "What did I miss?" Paula tells Braden, "Do that thing again." Braden starts repeating the chant, with Paula, Mark, and Wendy joining in, practicing for when the time comes. Adding a few new variations and verses this time, everyone is impressed at Braden's ability to make this stuff up on the fly. After everyone has a good laugh, the plan is set. At the right moment, Braden will begin basic training on the track. Kathy and Eddie couldn't throw a pool party without pizza. The pizza delivery arrives, and Kathy yells out, "The pizza's here." Kathy heads from the pool to the house, taking the delivery. It's hard for the guy delivering the pizza today to not notice all the June buggies. He has seen Kathy's, Paula's and Braden's June buggies on and off, but not five in one place at the same time. After delivering the pizza, he checks out the June buggies before he leaves. Paula and Erica are the first to head inside, but that is not surprising. Within a few minutes, everyone is inside, indulging in a few slices of pizza. Over pizza, John asks Eddie, "When do you think my June buggy will be ready?" Eddie replies, "Don't worry. It will be done before the summer. If you want it faster, you can come over and help." John tells Eddie, "I can do that. I can definitely do that." John, who will be a senior next year, wants his June buggy ready for the summer. After an afternoon in the sun, everyone heads out one by one. Johnson and Bobby B. are among the first to leave, simply because they want to drive around in their new toys. Eddie and John tinker with John's June buggy for a while, which mostly amounts to Eddie explaining to John what is left to do. Hearing that Johnson was able to get a custom color, John went with metallic copper. Eddie tells John that he is welcome to come by and help next weekend, making everything move along faster. John has no problem helping. He wants his June buggy yesterday. After everyone is gone, Kathy and Eddie get in their pool, waiting for the sun to set. Kathy puts her legs around Eddie's waist and asks Eddie, "I wonder how many times we've changed the future." Thinking about Kathy's question, Eddie replies, "Every day." Kathy asks, "How can you know?" Eddie explains, "When we went to the future, the mechanic told us that you didn't make it. But somehow we changed the future, and you did make it. So, we change the future every day. So do Mark and Paula, and everyone else, because you're here now." Kathy is silent, then tells Eddie, "Wow. I never thought of it that way." After thinking about changing the future, Kathy then wonders, "Then how about Mr. Crumb's house and all that?" Eddie replies, "Well, if he's the school drug dealer, he should go to jail." Kathy tells Eddie, "I mean like that we now own his property. I was supposed to die. We now own his property, and I shouldn't even be here." Eddie explains, "His house went to foreclosure. I'm guessing someone else would have bought it if we didn't." Kathy replies, "Oh yeah. I guess you're right." Kathy and Eddie finish the day by ushering in the beginning of the pool season, catching up on Kathy's promise to kiss Eddie once for every star in the sky. They take a brief pause, watching for Katarina's star to appear. When Katarina's star appears, Kathy whispers to Eddie, "Billions and billions to go."